RunDNA has an extensive range of running and walking footwear. They're trusted by podiatrists and physiotherapists. The RunDNA fitter's advice is second to none. Pop into RunDNA, 20 Manton Street, Hindmarsh, or 391 Fullerton Road, Fullerton. They're open 7 days, plenty of off-street parking. If you walk or run, you need to RunDNA.
Fair or fast, Sophie and Ben challenge each other with their sporting conundrums.
All right, Hooky, first one of the night. Andrew Dillon is not up to the job. Fair or fast?
Oh, Andrew Dillon, geez, had a tough week. I'm surprised he didn't lose more bark over the whole Penfolds wine bet saga. Might be a discussion for another day. I think this is fair, Soph. I mean, Andrew Dillon, as the CEO of the AFL, is swimming in a deep pool when it comes to big, top-end, powerful leaders. And I feel like the AFL leadership looks positively weak, in particular compared to the NRL, which is led by Peter Vlandis and Andrew Abdo. I think Goyder and Dillon have been miles off by comparison, and Richard Goyder, as the head of the AFL Commission, is clearly going to be making his way in the coming weeks, and no one from Clubland is going to be upset by that. Andrew Dillon's been really inconsistent. He lacks clarity. He comes across as awkward in front of a camera, and that's completely at odds with what we saw with Gillon McLachlan and the way that he just dealt with difficult issues with such strength and such purpose and such clarity. So, yeah, it's interesting as well, isn't it? They seem to be really relying on bringing in big names from Clubland to try and cover up their own foibles and failings at AFL level. So I think it's fair. I do think Andrew Dillon is not up to the AFL CEO's job. That might be a new commission chairman's job to try and replace him in the next 3 to 5 years.
I actually completely agree with you, Hooky. I mean, I've got to look at AFL, right? The first thing that I turn to is the players, but the next thing I actually normally turn to is the CEO. I think they're the face of the AFL. I think he's too shy in front of the camera. He takes too long to make decisions, and I think he's actually really a fence sitter. Like, I mean, let's just get this ball rolling. Stand on your ground and go. You're the CEO. You're the CEO. You make the final decision, and I want you to face the media and tell me that that's what you're doing.
Yeah, announce and defend rather than consult and then decide. Well done, Soph. Good point. A fence sitter. That's probably a pretty accurate description. Soph, here's one for you. The qualifying finals were boring and the elimination finals were excellent. Two more knockout games in the bye week is a no-brainer.
Ben, I think you're just setting me up so that you can have your own rant here and go on all about how you want this new final system, but, you know, whatever. You know, when you can't go on your own rant now because I've given you a yellow card, you might as well ask me the question. So you'll be surprised to know that I'm going fast here. Sorry. Look, I know it's how the VFL currently operates. And look, there's a fight at the moment in that bye week to be a top 10 qualifier, and they fight out for that, you know, 7th and 8th spot. But you know what? I think sometimes too much of a good thing is just too much, and it can turn it a bit sour. Let's look at the Big Bash for a second here. They tried to lengthen the season and make it longer, and people just got bored and they had to shorten it right up. So I'm going fast, but I'm looking forward to your response.
I think fast as well, but for completely different reasons that you think. The games last weekend don't matter. It was a no-brainer anyway. You have this bye week and just keep changing your reason for the justification of it. Sometimes it's the AFLW, then it's concussion, then it's we want everyone to be rested. Just fill it with some decent footy, for goodness sake. I think it is a no-brainer, but it's not because the elimination finals were great and the qualifying finals were boring. It's because we should just do it anyway.
I didn't see that coming, Wallace. I thought he was totally a fair. I thought he was getting up on his soapbox, but he always surprises me with these ones, so I'm going to throw one straight back at you, Hooky. If Pat Cummins can't front up for the first test, Australia's Ashes campaign is cooked. Fair or farce?
Oh, it's farce because we're not cooked, but gee, we're seriously compromised. And if he can't play the first test, I think he probably struggles for the second test because they're only a week apart. The third test isn't far, that's the Adelaide test, of course, isn't far behind that. I mean, it's not a disaster because Scott Boland comes into the team and he has been a true champion every time he's been handed the baggy green for Australia. But what's next? I don't think anyone knows if there is one injury between Stark and Boland and Hazelwood, and that's almost inevitable that comes. Who's the next bowler after that? I don't think even the Australian selectors know who that is yet. And then the other thing I'd say about Pat Cummins, and as much as Steve Smith would be the alternative captain and is a good captain, Pat Cummins is a wonderful leader. His capacity to remain calm under the pressure and stress of a series like the Ashes is first class. If he's not there for the first test, England is going to come all guns blazing. They're probably going to have Jofra Archer. They may well have Mark Wood as well. They're going to hit us with everything in the first test. And if Cummins isn't there, I worry about how we respond. And therefore, we are seriously compromised. Not cooked, but seriously compromised. So if you know your cricket, what do you think?
Wow, it's been a very nice night so far. I actually agree with you. I don't think it will be cooked. I think it will be hampered if he can't play the majority of the test, albeit the first test. Look, you're right. I reckon Boland will be his replacement, and I think England are going to target this. If they are successful, Stark and Hazelwood will have to back sooner, bowl more overs, and this could play dividends later on in the series. So I think it's hampered, but I don't think it's cooked. I actually think, and I know I asked us this question, and I've just had a go at you about getting up on your soapbox. I think the more interesting issue that's upcoming is I think if Stokes misses out, England's campaign is going to be rocked. And I think that's an interesting point of conversation.
No, very good point. But I'll just make the point, if you're going to have accuse me of rants, and then it's inevitable when you point the finger at someone, that means you've got three fingers pointing back at yourself. Sophie, just remember that little saying. I've got one more for you. We might get into the power rankings afterwards. Have a think about this, Soph. Forget AFLW, forget netball, forget golf, distance running, or hockey. Our women's cricketers are the state's pride and joy. Fair or fast?
Fast. Hookie, I'm a massive advocate for female sport and specifically South Australian female sport. So that being said, I have to go fast. I'm a strong believer in looking at where sport is at our youth. I think it dictates how well a state is going, looking at not just where we are now, but where we are going in the longevity of our success. So I know this has just broken out that Indira Pennelly and AJ Willoughby have just been chosen in the Australian under-19 squad to tour Sri Lanka next month in the cricket, and I think that's an incredible achievement. But let's look at our own Reagan Denton, who we actually interviewed recently, the amateur golfer selected to represent Australia at the Espirito Santo Trophy in October. Let's look at hockey. Hattie Shand and Lucy Sharman, both young, just represented Australia in Darwin. And if we're looking at the SA girls historically for AFLW, I mean, you've got to look at the Crows, how incredible they've been. I think they're the most successful club in the AFLW competition at the moment. And then can we forget the Thunderbirds? Like, I mean, they're just absolutely incredible. They're a state icon. I think they're the one and only team to win a trophy in all three eras of that league. So I think SA women's sport is just incredible, and it's actually just women's sport in general that is the pride and joy of South Australia. I think our cricket's incredible, but I can't say it's the sole pride and joy.
Soph, I would agree with you, but then we'd both be wrong. It is absolutely fair. Our cricketers are the state's pride and joy. They are world class. I just want to recognise Megan Shute, Darcy Brown and Talia McGrath. They're all going to the World Cup in India to represent Australia, a team that has been world beaters time and time and time again. All three of them are local South Australian products. Megan Shute and Talia McGrath have come from the southern suburbs. Darcy Brown has come from Kapunda. Those three, all incredible stories. Their longevity at the level. I mean, Darcy Brown's still young, so you can't claim that she's had longevity. But Megan Shute, Talia McGrath and Darcy Brown, I think right now those three, as cricketers representing South Australia and Australia, are the pride and joy over and above all of those very, very worthy contenders that you've referred to who come in on the podium, but not at the top where my three stand. Well done to Megan Shute, Darcy Brown, Talia McGrath, the state's pride and joy.
Fair enough. I thought we were going to have a really nice fair and fast where we're just really agreeable, slight different points, but nope, you just got to fall off with one like that.
You made an excellent argument, Sophie. You shouldn't feel ashamed. It was just wrong. That was all.
All right, Wallace, I think we need to get to power rankings before we start to have a brawl on our hands.